Welcome everyone to this week's episode of Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert and I'm joined by Seth Wernschau. How are you, Seth?
I'm good, Fred.
Oh, you have a nice box behind you right now. Is that a teaser for an upcoming review?
Yes, it is. this is also a teaser of the...
How long you had the board to get banged up like that?
It's almost a week now. My kids like it more than me, but I'm trying to get around on it.
Yeah, I bet they're better than you already on it.
Oh yeah, far better.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that kids just get an handle of it pretty quick. This week I'm going to talk about a bunch of things, mostly Tesla related for the first part, as usual, a bunch of Model 3 stuff. And then we're going to move on to a few other news in the EV space. But in the Tesla space, it was dominated by Model 3 this week, starting out from earlier in the week where we reported that Tesla started releasing the new software for the standard range Model 3 that has software lock features. So it's not something that we covered a lot over the past few months since Tesla launched the standard range Model 3. But everyone that bought the car... got a standard range plus, and we knew that already. Tesla is not building the standard range Model 3. They're just making the standard range plus, and they are software locking a bunch of things, including the range, but also a few convenience features. But that hadn't happened yet. So months after starting deliveries, everyone that bought the car at $35,000 or whatever, with if there was like Autopilot 2 on it, that was more than that, but let's say $35,000, they actually got a standard range plus with all the features that came with it for the past few months, and they've been enjoying that. Now, for the first time, I think it was on Saturday, it's the first time we heard of someone getting the car, getting a new standard range car, and it was an actual standard range, meaning that it was a standard range plus that's with software limited features, with the 220 miles range, without the live traffic, without autopilot, of course, because standard range plus comes with autopilot. And it's still pretty good value, you have to say, because originally, what we thought was going to be the $35,000 Model 3 was a different interior, less premium materials, like probably like a cloth seat in terms of the materials for the seat. A different center console too was supposed to be, but now you're getting all the same thing as the premium interior. Basically, everything is there. You just get a little bit less range, but we already knew that it was going to be the case. Live traffic data could be annoying a little bit. It's not that big of a deal. I mean, I assume that Tesla wasn't rushing to build that software lock version of the firmware of the Model 3 standard range, because they wanted to give maybe owners time to get used to the other features of a standard range plus, so that they could want to pay for an upgrade. What do you think?
That's actually probably somewhere near the truth. Maybe they didn't really build the software lock feature in the software yet, but Tesla gives a free autopilot thing to new drivers as well, so they try it, maybe they fall in love with it, and then they end up buying it later. Doesn't seem like a stretch to me.
No, and it's, everything is already in the car, so it's just flipping a switch for Tesla and getting that. At this point, it would be $4,500 difference, unless they charge a premium for upgrading after delivery.
What do you think about the interior? I thought it was kind of interesting that Tesla didn't do a fabric interior at all for the Model 3.
Yeah, I don't think they don't want the trouble of having any other option. They really want to limit the option on Model 3, and they really just don't want to sell that car. I mean, it cannot be more clear than that with not having it listed on the website. So they're really more pushing. It's just there by name, basically, to fulfill the promise of having a $35,000 version, but they're really not pushing for that. It's important to note, too, that the people that already got the delivery before this weekend still haven't gotten a software update with the software lock feature. So we assume that that's coming. They were told that that was coming when they bought the car, when they received the car, and it was a standard range plus. So we'll keep a lookout for that. But I talked to one of them one of the owner of Standard Range at Sacheria Plus, Mark Benton, and I asked him, like, will he upgrade if he gets the option to after that software update come, or if it comes? And he said he wasn't interested in it at all. And even if I asked what kind of feature he would miss the most from what he has access to right now, and that would be software lock. And he didn't see anything that he was going to miss that much. Even the range itself with the 20-mile difference, he's just going to end up charging 100% now daily instead of charging at 90%, which is going to end up basically the same, which is an advantage we've been talking about for a while for those software lock battery pack system.
Yeah, I mean, day to day, there's going to be absolutely no difference in range because you're not going to fill up the battery anyway.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, but again, it's only $3,000 or $4,000 difference?
The big difference now is the base autopilot package, which is not as good as the autopilot package used to be, since Tesla's like moved some features in the self-driving package instead. But it's still like the traffic aware cruise control, auto steers, and things like that. That you get, that's included inside that $4,500. So you pay that $4,500, you get that base autopilot, you get that slight boost in range. Yeah, we really need to break it down and see. It's a per person thing, like what I'm just thinking about though, if you don't get that base autopilot with the traffic aware cruise control, do you at least get a cruise control? You're just not sure. Inactive.
Yeah, you just get cruise control.
Okay, but
it's not even traffic aware cruise control. Okay. So I have that on my Model 3.
Okay, you have that on Model 3, yeah.
So it'll just run right into the car in front of you.
Well, there's still an emergency braking system, I would hope.
I'm not testing that.
No, you shouldn't. But it's a complicated situation, really. I mean, Tesla is really a pioneer in on that front of like software lock features inside vehicles. And the other thing, I talked to that owner that got what's his name, John Rougeau, and from Nashville, and he asked Tesla if he could eventually upgrade to a Standard Range Plus through a software update. And his owner advisor said that they don't have anything right now that they can do, that they cannot offer it right now. So even though that's something that Tesla announced when they first announced the Standard Range and Standard Range Plus, apparently it's not something that they're ready to do yet. So
you're not going to be able to upgrade to the car that you have now.
Yep.
When they take off the car that you have now and give you a Standard yep. Range.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. For the owners that already got the car, once they do remove those features, and if they do it, I assume that they're going to do it. It makes no sense not to do it since they didn't pay for those features. They're going to be ready to offer the upgrade. Otherwise, it'd be ridiculous. They'd be leaving so much money on the table. I assume that they're going to do that. It's just that they're just not ready to do it, which is nothing unusual for Tesla, really. All right, moving on to a report for CNBC this week that said that Tesla is planning to build the Model Y in Fremont, something that they've been talking about for a while, whether it's going to be in Fremont or in Gigafactory 1 in Nevada. But now apparently Tesla is already making preparation for it in Fremont. So it looks like it's decided, but Tesla didn't comment on the report, so it's not official yet. But there's multiple sources talking to CNBC that says that. And they also said at the same time that the Model S and X refresh is coming in September. So if you guys remember, we first reported the exclusivity on the Model S and X refresh. I think our report dates from back in June or July of last year. So it's been a while now. We had all the details about even the first design images of design drawings of the interior that they plan to release in Model S and X. When we first heard of that, we heard that they were aiming for early Q3 2019. That was a year ago. So CNBC reporting that in September, I wouldn't say that it goes against a report. Like, it just wouldn't be surprising that the timeline just slipped back a little bit. And it's still in Q3, so it wouldn't make sense that would happen within the next 3 to 4 months. Yeah, and in terms of the Model Y in Fremont, I think that also makes a lot of sense. I think the report is credible. We've been seeing how much it makes sense due to the number of parts that Model Y is supposedly sharing with Model 3. Elon Musk has been saying like 75% of the parts of Model Y comes from Model 3. So it makes sense that they are built at the same place, that they're built together, that you leverage some of the existing equipment. But at the same time, it's still increasing the volume, the output of Fremont significantly. I mean, Model Y is expected to be an even bigger vehicle program than Model 3. So, and Fremont is pretty packed already. In the CNBC report, they said that the idea for the preparation for the Model Y is going to be to combine even more the Model S and X production into one line. And right now they are already reducing production, but as we know that the demand for Model S and X also has dropped recently. But the changes also, in my opinion, just for the new Raven Model S and X that Tesla launched last month, but that's mainly the drive units, and the drive units are made at Gigafactory 1. So the both production facilities are very much linked together, in my opinion, and now Tesla is just trying to shuffle everything so that Model Y can fix into the mix somewhere. But I think the Model Y assembly is going to be in Fremont. It just makes little sense that it would be anywhere else.
Yeah, that's some interesting things about that. I don't know if Laura Kolodny, who's the CNBC reporter, who, you know, has a little bit shaky of a track record in terms of her sources, but this one sounds legit. I thought it was interesting that she said that the Model S and X would be combined on the same assembly line. Isn't that already the case?
Partly the case, I think. Like the general assembly and there's a few parts of assembly that are not combined together. And of course, the platform is the same. Like the battery packs are the same. And so there's a lot of things that are built on the same lines. But I think that Tesla is seeing more opportunities to merge them together.
As far as the building of the vehicles, it isn't so. Most of the battery pack, the drivetrain, the motors of the Model 3 are all built in the Gigafactory, right?
Is that drivetrain, battery packs.
So I mean it's kind of like almost half built at the Gigafactory anyway.
It depends on how you look at it. I think Fremont is still a bigger part of the production process because just the general assembly is such a huge part. The bodywork is such a huge part, and that's Fremont too. So I'd still think that Fremont is a bigger part of the production process of the Model 3 than Gigafactory 1.
And then so she didn't really... Did she rule out the Gigafactory as a model? I mean, perhaps the Model Y being such a big, anticipated big product. I wonder if it could be produced at both those factories, or maybe even a third factory. Obviously, China's going to have a Model Y.
Yeah, Gigafactory 3 is going to also produce Model Y. But yeah, I think just splitting the production between the two, but still... Each factory is going to have their own part of the process, I think. Gigafactory 1 just having the responsibility to build the drivetrains and build the battery packs and build the battery cells for Model Y is going to be a huge increase in output for them. So they're going to have to handle that. I think the split between the two, they're not going to produce both full Model Y cars. They're just going to both have their own part in it, and the general assembly would make sense in 3 months. So even though it's not 100% confirmed yet, I think it looks very likely from that report and from what we know so far.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like most decisions that whatever is easiest and quickest, that usually wins out recently, at least.
Well, what's the lowest capital expenditure, too? I think it's important. I mean, Elon has been talking about Model Y production, the capital expenditure required for Model Y production to be a fraction of it for of what it was for the Model 3, which is very ambitious, I think. And that's also considering the fact that they are planning a fall 2020 start of production or deliveries, at least for the higher end version of it. I think it's going to be very similar to what happened with Model 3, which they kind of did manage to achieve the deadline, but they ended up starting very slow production ramp up, and the volume never came until 6 months into it for Model 3. So probably the same for Model Y, I assume.
I hope it's not going to be that long. I really do, because that was a painful 6 month ramp.
Yeah.
And theoretically, you know, if most of the car is based on the Model 3, theoretically they won't need quite as much ramp up.
Yeah, theoretically, but there's always things that goes wrong. I mean, there's so many things that can go wrong when you have 10,000 parts inside the product. So hopefully we'll monitor, of course, Model Y road to production very closely in the coming months, the whole coming year, really. All right. In the meantime, Model 3 is still expanding to other market, even though being released over a year ago. It made it to China. Today, Tesla opened reservation pre-orders for... I'm confusing two stories right now. It made it to Australia and other right-hand drive market. They're now all open. What made it to China is the made-in-China version is now open for pre-order. So let's not confuse the two. Model 3 is already available in China, but the least expensive version is available at 377,000 yen. Now, the made-in-China version is going to be 328,000 yen. That's the equivalent of $47,500 for a vehicle that's sold in the U.S. for $39,500. So, still a big difference.
There's some tariff built in there.
But that's the thing. There's not supposed to be. That was the goal of the made-in-China version, to avoid those tariffs. So, assuming that Tesla was able to produce the car for the same price in China as it does in the U.S., the difference would have been a tariff, so that 49,000 yen difference, which is about $7,000, would be the tariffs. And Tesla didn't make any improvement in terms of costs between Gigafactory 3 and Fremont and Gigafactory 1, which produce the Model 3 right now and then export them to China. So that would be the idea behind the pricing. But so it's not that cheap. We thought it could be cheaper for the Chinese market a little bit and have a bigger hand pack. That said, Tesla could now get access to some EV incentive in China, which could end up at the end of the day reducing the drive away price of the car. Hopefully that's the case. It's just right now they cannot confirm any type of incentive, because incentives are always changing in China right now. And the cars, that's the other news from that. The cars are not coming for 6 to 10 months. So Tesla is right now taking pre-orders, but they won't deliver for 6 to 10 months, which of course makes sense because the factory producing them is not even completed. And even then, 6 to 10 months is a very aggressive timeline for what is basically just a steel building with nothing inside.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's still a delay on what Tesla was previously saying, because they were saying that early in Q4, the production is going to start. Like, now it sounds more like it's going to be late in Q4 and even maybe early 2020. So we'll see about that. That's going to be...
That's deliveries. They've got to run a couple, you know, practice runs and kind of tune things up. I think maybe they'll have a couple early ones in mid Q4, I guess, and then but start delivering. I mean, 6 months from now is... December, and 10 months from now is, you know, next February, March. So it's...
No, that's not September. Know. That's October, November. We're not in May anymore, basically. We're in June. First of May. So, we're basically in June, yeah.
So 6 months from June is December, right?
Oh, okay. So December, sorry. Okay, I said you're in September, sorry.
Yeah, so... So December looks like best case scenario.
Yeah. Which, again, makes more sense than September, October, like early October, which have been what Elon was previously guiding. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's really hard to gauge because China is so fast, but Elon is usually so late. So, like, it's hard to guess where this is going to end up.
Yeah, but we see China so fast too, but I mean, delivering a car of the quality of the Model 3 is not something that they're used to either. I mean, they used to do it with like some kind of partnership with joint venture, but that now it's just Tesla. So Tesla needs to hire a whole bunch of staff and everything like that. They held a job fair, and apparently there's a high demand for the job there. So that's the upside. So that there is very much sought after jobs there. But I mean, December, I'd be pleasantly surprised if Tesla is actually producing a decent volume of cars. We'll see. But yeah, what I was saying just before that is the expansion to right-hand drive markets. So in early May, Tesla launched in the UK, which was the first time that they launched in a right-hand drive market for the Model 3. Now they launch also in Australia, in New Zealand, in Japan, in Hong Kong, in Ireland, and Macau. Is that how you say that? Macau?
Yep.
Australia, the price is fairly decent. They already are releasing the Model 3 Standard Range Plus, which is not something that they did before when they launched in a new market with the Model 3. They normally just launched the higher-end version. Now the lowest-end version they don't have the Standard Range period. They have the Standard Range Plus, unless it is available as of the new item again. We don't know that yet. And it starts at $70,370 Australian dollars, which is the equivalent of $48,600 USD. But that's the drive-away price of the car with all the local fees applied to it. And it's decent. If you compare that to BMW 3 Series, it's $67,000. So it's like it's very close to that price, very competitive, which is a very good news. Australia should be the biggest of those market, of those new ones in terms of high right-hand drive. The UK is still the biggest right-hand drive for sure. Japan is, of course, a bigger market, but not for Tesla historically. Tesla has had tough time in China. In Japan, I mean, they are very big on domestic brands in Japan. Very tough to penetrate the market for a foreign automaker, and Tesla is no exception, even though they tried to do that thing at one point where Elon went over there and was like, the Tesla is at its heart is a Japanese car because of Panasonic and their batteries inside. I don't think it had the big impact, really, but there was a nice try from his part. A nice try to get the marketing angle on it. And it's a fair point, really, because Panasonic is definitely a big part of Tesla suppliers, supply chain and everything. So,
yeah, not just batteries, also solar panels.
Yeah, now solar panels too. But in terms of the like they wanted to sell the cars themselves, they like it's not a made in Japan car, but it's still has a lot of Japanese parts in it, which is fair.
Yeah, the Japanese market is traditionally extremely hard for foreign makers to get into. The Japanese are very, I don't want to say jingoistic, but they're very faithful to Japanese brands. I think still 90% of Japanese cars are Japanese brands. So
90?
It's something really big like that. So it's really hard for companies like Tesla to get into the Japanese market. Although I think Tesla's got an advantage because it's kind of like outside the norms.
Yeah, there's nothing like it.
Right.
And they do like technology. They really like technology advanced. They are early adopters and things like that. So on that front, Tesla should have any issues. They're not that big on bigger cars, though. So Model S and X might not have been the best entries for them. So maybe Model 3 is gonna be different. It's cheaper. It's smaller. That'd be something to check how Model 3 does in Japan, if it helps Tesla grow its presence there.
I'm also interested to see what happens in Hong Kong, because Hong Kong had such a strong start on the Model S and X, but when the incentives went away, it was such a steep drop-off. It'll be interesting to see how Model 3 does, if it'll have the same kind of like, you know.
It should have an early boost just because it's a new car. People want to have the new car, want a new version of Tesla. But then without the incentive, and with Hong Kong just making it difficult for anyone to buy a car, period, because they have congestion issues and the traffic problems and everything, I don't I don't bet right now on Hong Kong being a significant driver of demand for Tesla until they figure this out. But Australia should be pretty good. New Zealand, even though it's an extremely small market, should be pretty good too. Then Japan is that wild card, as we just discussed. All right, we released an email that Elon sent out to all the staff earlier this week. It was about still that same thing that we reported last week about the potential for Q2 to be a record quarter for deliveries for Tesla and what they need to do to achieve that. Last week, Elon was talking about production. They needed to increase production. And from what I'm hearing so far from Fremont Factory is that they are pretty good at doing the thousand units a day right now. So that looks figured out. And Elon said in the email that that looking fine. The demand is strong. He's not talking about any production issues right now, but he's talking about deliveries issues. He said that while our demand is strong, we have a lot of vehicle deliveries to catch up to in order to have a successful quarter. So. It all sounds like it's still that same problem that we've been seeing from Tesla for years, where they build up a big backlog of order at the end of the quarter, and now they have to deliver a ton of volume over the last few weeks, over the last month of the quarter, which is a much higher rate than they do throughout the rest of the quarter. So it takes a big, it's a big burden on the employees. It's a big burden on the supply chain. It's just getting cars to customers. Like the at some point, they had to build their own car carrier. They had to buy car carrying companies. They had to do deliveries direct to consumers with Tesla Semi. They had to do everything they could just to move the cars because of that just problem with execution. That's an execution problem, really, because everything else is working. They can sell the cars.
So does Tesla need a COO, you think?
They need a COO. They need a better delivery organization, really.
I mean, that would fall under a COO, I believe.
Yeah.
COO, obviously.
We talked last year about Tesla just doing a completely restructuring of their delivery team, taking them out of the sales divisions. Normally, the delivery team were under the sales divisions. Depending on in each market, they removed that. They hired a top logistic executive from Walmart. Walmart is basically a logistic company. That's all they do. They are a marketing and logistic company. They move a product around. They don't make much of anything, and they just move things around. So it looked like a good hire, but she didn't last long. She's already out. We reported that this week, and we reported that Tesla also restructured again. The deliveries, they took them out of their own organization.
So it's interesting because Tesla seems to have in its like medium to long term view the idea that it's going to be able to deliver cars to customers remotely and via self-driving, which to me seems very like future, way futuristic. But theoretically, if you can self-drive a car and pick up people next year, it should be able to deliver itself next year. So maybe this is to Tesla's high management staff. They're like, let's Band-Aid fix this because we only have to wait a couple more months or maybe another year before these cars are driving themselves right out of the factory, going to superchargers and all the way to Ohio to deliver themselves, rather than having a delivery expert do it. Me personally, I'm not so certain that that's going to be the case in a year or two, maybe three or four or more. I don't know. So maybe it would make sense to kind of put together like a long-term logistical solution to the delivery problem.
We move on to something that we reported earlier today about Tesla CTO and co-founder J.B. Straubel that exercised a bonus option. But that's just part of the story. Like, it's not that big of a deal that he exercised like $3 million of option.
It was kind of an excuse to unleash some information that you and I both heard separately.
Yeah, yeah. So that's important to note, because every time we report anything that could be perceived as negative toward Tesla, people doubt us a lot more than when we post something that's positive on Tesla. Like, people, those information are coming from the same sources. So we have a few different sources, of course, within Tesla, but it's not like, well, some sources only tell us negative thing about Tesla, some sources only tell us positive thing about Tesla. Our sources tells us most things that they know about the company within whatever or the position in the company. Sometimes those things are good, sometimes those things are bad. So I like some of our readers, they decide to trust some of them, even though they're coming from the same sources. It's pretty funny. In this case, the information that came from one of Seth's sources and from one of my sources later on is that J.B. Straubel is making himself very scarce at Tesla's offices. Over the past 6-8 months or so, he hasn't been seen much. Even to the point that one of the sources said that they thought he was on leave. That's how much. And those people were working with him, like, so they were not like just in the office and they just didn't see GB around. They were working close, at least on some project with him. And now he hasn't been seen much around. So. We don't know why. We asked Tesla. They didn't respond to our inquiry. So we just have to speculate from there.
And it could be a ton of different things.
Yeah, that's a thing, right? So as usual, in the article Electric, we post the facts that we know. Even from the source of the facts are coming from sources, there are still facts that we can confirm them through multiple sources, which we did at this point. Then in the Electric stake, if we decide to speculate, we speculate. But that's just our speculation. So you do whatever you want with that. And our speculation right now, just like you said, can be a bunch of different things. It can be a personal thing. It can be like he needed some time off for himself or for family or for we don't know. So. Whatever he needs to do, or it could be just it could be like he's working on a different project that it's more secretive, that he's on a smarter team that doesn't need to be at the headquarters. Could be that he's working more on Gigafactory 1 in Nevada, though I tried to check that and we don't hear anything more about him being working out of there, though he does sometimes for sure, just not to a degree that would justify him not being seen at all in the Bay Area. Someone suggested Maxwell, that he could be working with Maxwell. I don't know how credible that could be, because like Tesla could, unless just like testing their technology, like just testing samples, which I assume they did for a long time ago now, the acquisition was only completed earlier this month, which enabled Tesla now to get their IP and start working with their IP. So I don't know, like a 6-month absence would justify working with Maxwell would be justified to would justify a 6-month absence. I'm not so sure. Do you have any other theory?
There was a couple. I mean, obviously the Gigafactory, you know, China's happening. That's a lot of stuff, you know. If he maybe he's over there helping out, the Maxwell thing. Maybe there's a new thing, the next Maxwell, the next breakthrough that they're looking for. I thought it was interesting, just like coincidentally, Dana Hall, one of the Bloomberg reporters, I think bad good cop Tom Randall, bad cop Dana Hall. She saw JB like in the middle of the day taking her kid to school. And he was just hanging out in San Francisco.
No, I think it was this morning. I think it was
early this morning. This morning?
Yeah.
All right. So this morning he was hanging out in San Francisco. Don't know what that means. Like, there also could be, I mean, I know that Tesla has like some off-campus skunkworks type of situations going on. So maybe there's like a new project happening and he's kind of running that. Or did you mention, I don't know, the recycling company?
Yeah, I did in the article, but
so there's a recycling company that theoretically Tesla will bring. I don't know what I don't want to speculate, but JB Straubel is listed as the owner, right? Isn't that
an officer of the company? Yeah, so I think he's an investor too in it. I think
could be bringing that online or something.
And his special project manager at Tesla that works under him is also an officer of the company.
It's weird. Like
that. Yeah. That so there's no official link between Tesla and other. So it's all indirect links with him, with the two of them working at Tesla and working in the company. But Tesla, there's no direct link that says that Tesla owns a part of the company or all of it. We don't know.
Yeah, it just seems weird that a CTO of a company could be working on another company. I say that even though Elon Musk is the CEO of that and SpaceX and 16 other Neuralink things.
Is that the companies are directly related in the term that Tesla was Tesla is developing its own recycling technology, especially for batteries. Though I don't think that it's specifically for batteries, the Redwood thing, the Redwood recycling that we were talking about. I don't remember having anything specific to batteries, just material recycling, which could include batteries, really. But all right, moving on. We have the supercharger limitation that we talked about last week, where Tesla is starting to limit the. Did we talk about that in the podcast last week, or was it released just after the podcast?
It might not release. Not that great.
Yeah. Well.
Well, we did talk about. Ways to do it. This is a specific way to do it.
No. I mean, that's different and new to this week. I mean, the actual announcement of the limitation. That's what I meant.
We did talk about the limitation.
Okay. So last week, but just a quick recap. Tesla introduced a new way for at the busy supercharger station. So at 17% of them, 8% at all time, 9% depending on the time, if like the holidays and things like that. So, but it's affect roughly 17% of all supercharger in America. Are limited to 80% max charge. That's what they said, but they didn't communicate it very well or at all, really, that there's a way to override the 80% limit of the state of charge there. Well, they did communicate one thing that we did release is that if you are routed to a supercharger station that's not your end destination, but that you need to charge there to a certain state of charge to get to your end destination, then you don't get that 80% limit, which makes sense. But it's not a great way to override it. I mean, sometimes I route myself to a supercharger knowing that I'm going to need it to get another destination, but I don't put the end destination until I'm at the supercharger. So anyway, now there's another way to override it that they confirmed earlier this week, is that you simply need to change the max charge on the charging screen or on your app, either one of them. So, which is basically the standard way to do it. So, what that new with that confirmation that what the new 80% limit on the top state of charge at those station is basically just a default limit state of charge that automatically put when you start charging there. But it can be overridden just by changing the limit. So it's not a big deal. You just need to realize that you have the limit, and there's a notification that comes with it. So you should easily be able to realize it. And then if you want to charge more than 80%, then you just move it and you're done. So not a big deal. Not as big of a deal that we thought at first, but Tesla just, as usual, they are not that the greatest at the communication. So
yeah, the bottom line to reiterate, you really shouldn't be going beyond 80% if you're traveling. The only time you would really need to go beyond 80% is if you're going, your next stop is a non-Tesla destination. Most superchargers you can get to with 80% easily. So I don't know.
Yeah, because the idea is that once you get to the next destination, you're going to be able to charge faster at a lower state of charge than that last 20%, which takes a lot more time. All right, and then that's an interesting one. You remember a Martin Eberhard set?
Oh, yeah.
For those of you who don't remember Martin Eberhard, he's the original co-founder at Tesla. Mark Tarpening are the two really original co-founders that really started the company. And then Elon, JB, Martin Wright, a few of them were added after the fact due to their very important early contribution to the company. But the very first two to start it was Martin Eberhard and Mark Tarpening. And Martin has exited the company late 2008, early 2009. He was ousted basically by Elon Musk when things weren't going great with the Roadster. Elon, as the biggest shareholder, managed to push him aside. And he did try a few different CEOs, and then when those CEOs didn't work out, he just said, all right, I'll do the job myself. And he's been doing it ever since. But Martin went away, but he still stayed in the shadows of the EV industries, working position that weren't as much in the limelight. First at Volkswagen, he did a few years leading Volkswagen electric vehicles, the third development in the U.S. He went at what became Lucid, what we know as Lucid Motors now, but back then it was something else, at Ativia. It was called Ativia. I did a year there. And then he started his own company that we reported a few years ago called HinEvHit. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Which became or was acquired by SF Motors, which is a lot easier to say.
SF Motors, yeah. And SF Motors have been doing some cool things. Like last year, they unveiled their first two electric vehicles, and they look very cool. And they apparently have electric platform, electric drivetrain, and electric battery packs developed by HinEvHit and Martin Eberhard and his team there that were acquired by SF Motors. Now, what we learn now is that he didn't last long at SF Motor, and I'm speculating here, but I think it's a safe assumption that a big part of SF Motor's acquisition of the company, because it was a small company that was only a year or two old at this point, at the point of the acquisition, and they acquired them, I think mostly for the talent there. It was a, what do you call that? An
acquire.
Okay. Yeah. Because they did have some IP for sure. They did a few patterns and trademarks application, but I think they wanted the engineering talent that developed the battery pack. So they did, but they didn't for long because a few months later, we now learned that Eberhard quit SF Motors and he started another company, which is extremely similar to HinEvHit in terms that they're also making an electric vehicle battery pack, electric vehicle platform. It sounds to, again, sells to OEMs, and he called it TVNI. I think you could say TVNI, but
I have no
TVNI is HinEvHit spelled backwards, basically. So that's not the only resemblance to the original company. It's also just like HinEvHit, it's based in California and in Germany. And in Germany, it's still Heiner Fies, who was one of the main powertrain engineer, used to work at Bosch. Eberhard started HinEvHit with him. He ended up at SF Motors, but then he came back to Dow TVNI, along with a few others that work at HinEvHit. So if just based on those information, it looks a lot like Eberhard just took a buyout from SF Motors, worked there for a few months, and then said, all right, I'm out, and then used the money that he got to just start another company that's exactly the same. And I wouldn't be surprised if he tried to sell that company to another OEMs in the near future. I don't know. What do you think about that? Someone that does that, said.
I don't know. He's been jumping around a lot. Obviously, so like when you think about like the history of electric cars, he's going to be very important for coming up with the idea of using basically laptop cells, the 18650s, in a car. Like the AC engine the AC motor had been done by GM with the EV1, but his like real contribution, and an important one to this day, is that going to lithium ion and getting those cells and packing an enormous like 7,000 of them in a car. So he's, he's already in the history of electric vehicles, and that's kind of what that doing that made electric vehicles viable again. Getting lithium, no other kind of chemistry is even close in terms of energy density. So he's important. He's like a big guy, but since his departure from Tesla, he's kind of been jumping around. And it's hard to say if any of these companies that he's been working with are going to become viable, in the mass market field. I think that a lot of the idea about these smaller companies is to get picked up by like a Ford or a GM or any of the Japanese or German brands, just for their IP that they come come up with. So, and it sounds like this company has German ties. So, you know, maybe they get picked up by Daimler or BMW or Volkswagen or something.
Though the first version of it got picked up by a Chinese firm that also has manufacturing in the US. Yeah.
Right. So Chinese as well. So, I mean, that's kind of my take on these things. It seems really hard for me to believe that this company is going to build, or any of the other companies are going to build, mass market cars by themselves without any help from one of the big players. And I think that's why Tesla is kind of unique.
Yeah, it's more an IP thing too. It's more like they want the expertise to build a battery pack that presumably still use the same cells, that the same format at least that you first designed with the Roadster. But so in my view, even though it's kind of shady to just repackage the company again and again like that, if it resulted in SF Motors having a great electric vehicle like architecture that they can build on for their programs, and we're gonna see what how it comes out with the I don't remember the names of the cars, but they look pretty cool, and the specs look all right. So if the cars come out fine, then that's a plus for the market, I think. And then if they do it again and get sold to another company that ends up having a great platform with a slightly different IP, that's great too. I mean, it still accelerates the adoption of electric vehicles, which was the original goal when he set out to create Tesla. So I think he's still doing what you set out to do 20 years ago. Or a little less than that, actually, but you get my point. So, yeah, good luck to Martin and Berhard and Tivini, or whatever you pronounce that. GM, they confirmed this week that they plan to have their own sort of massive EV charging network in the U.S. Thousands of charging stations, they said, thousands of them. So it would be a massive charging network. The announcement was weird. Apparently, it was announced through CNN. Like the GM did confirm it and did give them press information, but there wasn't any release to the wider to the rest of the media. It was just like a CNN announcement. So we got the information through them and through the company that they partner with for the. For the construction, Bechtel,
yeah, and Bechtel. They're actually known as I know them as a steel company, but obviously they do construction, and they're a little bit of a conglomerate in that area. So seems like a good partner to have. Like, they know construction, that's important.
But they don't want to pay very large.
Yeah, so nobody's paying for this, and
so far
I'm not quite sure how that works.
Well, the way that it sounds it works is that GM and Bechtel are putting the plans together, and then they're looking to investor to actually invest in the project, which sounds weird because, I mean, GM keeps saying that they are all in with electric vehicles, and if you are all in on electric vehicles and you also have a plan for an EV charging infrastructure, then why wouldn't you invest in that EV charging infrastructure? Because it's going to be an important business if the future is indeed all electric, like GM and most of us believe. Well, like most of us believe, and like GM says that they believe. So,
right,
they're talking about launching 20 other all electric vehicles. Would make sense to have a partnership with a large charging network out there, and if they own that charging network, they're great. But now it looks like they want a hand in it. They want to be like in charge of operating it, but they don't want to be the one forking flipping the bill,
which is weird because it doesn't seem like, you know, as far as GM's total, like if they're going to really have 20 different EVs and they're not all going to be in China, then they need to patch up some holes that Electrify America, EVgo, and Green Lots and all the others don't have. Like, for instance, if you want to drive from LA to San Francisco, like the two biggest cities in California, which is the biggest US, you can't do it on the Grapevine because there's not a fast charging station on the Grapevine, which is crazy. Like, and then you can't drive from LA to Phoenix, another place where like long distance EV driver, and all you would have to do is put a charger between LA and Phoenix. And
who goes to Phoenix though?
I don't know. Maybe you go to LA, you know. Maybe,
yeah,
maybe
yeah, the other way around makes sense. I wouldn't go to Phoenix right now. It's probably 100 degrees outside.
Right, but maybe in the winter or something. I don't know. Anyway, the point is that like these are huge EV cities, like relatively speaking. And you can't get around because like EVgo and ChargePoint and Electrify America kind of only want to put charging stations where they can get a subsidy from the local businesses or whatever. They don't want to put one in the middle of nowhere where they're actually needed for long distance driving. And that this is the problem that, I mean, so here's another good example. The PR manager for GM, who later left to do their big trucks, but the PR manager for EVs said he would have gotten a Bolt, but he can't drive it home because he was, you know, he would have to go from Chicago to Detroit, and there wasn't enough range in the Bolt, which is 240 miles, to get all the way there. And I was like, there's got to be a fast charging station between Chicago and Detroit. And he's like, no, there's not. And I'm like, why don't you put one there? Like, you know, it would be helpful. I'm sure you're not the only one going between Chicago and Detroit. And he's like, yeah, I don't know. They don't want to do it. So like, they know that there's a problem. Like if anybody at GM is driving EVs between cities, they know that there's a problem because nobody's putting electric charge. I mean, Electrify America is kind of getting there, but it's like, as of right now, today, and you know, the immediate future, there's no way to get around in a Bolt or any other EV besides a Tesla without, like, you know, overnight charging or level two charging or doing stuff like that, because Electrify America, EVgo, and all the others don't want to put chargers in the middle of cities because they're not subsidized there by local municipalities. And, you know, they when they make assumptions of where they should put chargers, they kind of say, well, where's the population? Okay, they're there, so let's put one in the middle of the population. When in reality, you kind of want to put them between population centers, not in the middle of them.
Yeah, anyway. You still want some in the populated area?
Yeah, especially for people with apartments and condos.
Yeah, and they said that they want to do that too in that new charge network. And it was interesting, but they said they were going to use the OnStar data that they have on their existing fleet of gas-powered cars to learn how those cars are driven and where they are not driven, where they get parked and they're not used, because GM's thinking is that people are going to charge their cars when they're not using them. That's a brilliant assumption here. you don't charge it when you're driving it, but okay. And so they want to know where that is, and they're going to put charging station there, which is okay.
I mean, if you have a 240-mile car, like, God forbid you have a 120-mile commute, like, basically just charge at home. Like, no, most people start the morning with a full charge, and that's it. And, like, nobody gets it. Like, you talk to GM, you talk to any of these people, and they just, like, you know, you talk to the ChargePoint people, and they're like, yeah, we're trying to put one at every grocery store. And I'm like, who, like, nobody would buy it. Like, why do you want it at a grocery store? I mean, I get it if the grocery store is between San Francisco and LA. Like, that's great. While I'm charging, I'll go buy some food or something. But, like, it's the grocery store is, like, you know, five minute drive for me. Like, I wouldn't even bother charging. It's not even worth the time. So,
and the money, because they charge you through those charge point stations. I'm just going to charge with my 12 cents a kilowatt hour at home instead of whatever you're charging me there. So,
right.
Yeah, it's still a young industry that's maturing, the EV charging industry.
One of these days, I'm going to get around to writing that post about why Tesla in every area is 5 years ahead of everybody else. And charging networks is, like, the number one area. That's obvious.
Hopefully, I think we're gonna talk again like a year from now about it, and it's not gonna be that big of an issue because of the large investment that's going on from the Electrify America and from Hyundai and a few other networks. But yeah, it is happening a little bit slower than I thought it would. Like, I remember maybe it was like 2 years ago when ChargePoint unveiled that 400 kilowatt charging system for the station, the high powered station. I thought that would be like, it would be like hundreds of them by now. Like, it was 2 years from now. I thought it'd be hundreds of them on popular routes in between cities. I don't know how many there are out there, but they're not that many. So yeah, it is frustrating for all EV owners out there. But there's just too many models coming on right now that people are going to see the business case at some point, and they're going to want to take advantage of it. It's just economics. It just makes sense in terms of a business perspective. And where there's money, there's going to be investment to be made, and people are going to want a part of it. They're going to want a piece of the pie. Anyway, in the meantime, thanks a lot for listening, everyone. Thanks a lot for watching. And you can subscribe on YouTube and subscribe on your podcast app and leave a review if you want. That's always appreciated. We hope that the audio got better at this time. We tried to adjust the level so that we are more on the same page. Again, I apologize for the construction work outside. That was pretty damn loud for 50 seconds. Sorry about that. But otherwise, I hope you like this show. And we're going to see you same place, same time next week. Ciao.